Excuse me, this is the operator. Today's call is now being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's PEDNR call, we have Michele Nailon, Tatiana Kramsova, Helen Laverty, Sergei Gorbunov, Mike O'Connor, James Liddell, Elaine Doolin, Alan Greenberg, Ron Wickersham, Barry Cobb, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Mason Cole. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Glenn de Saint-Géry, Margie Milam, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. No apologies for today. And if I can just remind everyone, please state their name when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to give my thanks to Michele for chairing last week. I just had a chance to listen to the call last night, and it was enjoyable. He did ask that everyone be good girls and boys, and Cheryl, I'm afraid you didn't meet that criteria with giving away gifts at the end of the meeting. For those who aren't on the call, this is an incentive to go listen to it.
The gifts were great.
I do have a couple of comments. I know everyone on this call was not necessarily on last week's, but a couple of comments, and again, if you're intrigued by what I say, then you can go back and listen to the call. It was only an hour and was really worthwhile. There was a discussion at the beginning on some statistics published by .UK on renewals, and both the document presented and the discussion turned up two interesting things, which I found fascinating. The first one was the statement that was made by a number of people and proven by the data that people don't take the expiration seriously until the domain name disappears. And I think that's something that we have to think about as we go ahead. The other is 25%. The statistics said 25% of the registrants believed their domain renewed automatically. And I'm presuming, although it didn't say it, that in fact in the UK they don't renew automatically. So just that kind of misunderstanding on behalf of the registrant, I think, is the environment that we're working in, and we have to factor that in. There were a number, if anyone has any comments either about what I'm saying or against it, please scream out or put your hand up. There were a couple of comments last week on why are we looking at ccTLD data, and I think from my point of view the question was answered very well in that we don't have any data from gTLDs. And it's intriguing that although expiration is a significant aspect of domain names, we have so little data up to what's really going on. James, you had a comment.
Yes, I just I don't think it was I was part of the group that was questioning the ccTLD data, and I don't think it was a slight against that necessarily. It was more of a question of how directly applicable it was, not that we shouldn't be looking at it. So I just wanted to.
I certainly didn't take it as a slight. From my perspective, it's applicable in that at some level, registrants are registrants. And we can assume that there are at least some characteristics which are uniform despite the different rules associated with the TLD, with the ccTLD in question. But more important, I think it comes down to we don't have any other data, and to ignore it completely does not appear right either.
Certainly. And I don't think anyone was advocating ignoring it, just more of a question of finding out where its boundaries of usefulness were.
As I was listening to the discussion, I realized that looking at the document, listening to the discussion, I had a bunch of questions in my mind, which no one raised during the discussion, although maybe they were raised in the chat that I can't look at. And there was a lot of talk about reminders, but I didn't know at the time what the rules were for within Nominet for what the reminders are. I did go and check. Just in case anyone's interested. And the process is the following. Registrars apparently should, but without any specific guidance, provide reminders prior to expiration. If there are any firm guidelines, I couldn't find them very easily. At expiration, Nominet apparently sends out its reminder. At that point, the domain goes dark, and it remains dark for up to 30 days. If the registrant comes back, they can get it back at that point. They then, after it goes dark, it's suspended, and for another 60 days, so a total of 90 days before it's actually deleted. So that gives you some idea of what .uk, in any case, thinks is an adequate opportunity to restore the domain after expiration without making a claim that that's what we should be aiming at. Michele. Is Michele there?
He's Ellen.
Sorry, just trying to get myself off mute.
Okay.
Just as a Nominet registrar, I've never had any communication from them with regard to registrar reminders. Just so I mean, if you didn't find it, it's probably because, as far as I'm aware, and maybe one of the other Nominet registrars could confirm, I don't think there is any particular set of rules. Nominet's approach to a lot of the relationships between the registrars and the registrants is quite hands-off in a lot of respects, but they do handle some of the notifications to the registrants, both from the initial registration of the domain through its expiry system. There's also another thing as well where the domain will become decoupled from the, in kind of ICANN-speak, sponsoring registrar. In Nominet-speak, it isn't the same thing. But basically, the domain can end up being kind of semi-orphaned, as it were.
Yeah, the implication is, but it doesn't say it, that after expiration, it comes under the jurisdiction of Nominet and not the registrar. But it wasn't quite clear there. In terms of notices, the only thing that shows up on the Nominet website is in an FAQ. It says you will normally get a notice prior to registration from the registrar. If for any reason it doesn't show up, we will give you a notification after expiration or at expiration. I don't remember the exact wording. So anyway, I found that quite interesting. It would be interesting to follow up that and understand when domains really do get renewed. That is, of the ones that are renewed, and I think it's 68% or something, how many of them get renewed prior to expiration, how many in the first 30 days, how many in the next 60 days. I think that information would be interesting. Again, not necessarily directly applicable, but it would give us some idea of how people use domain names and react to the expiration and disappearance. There was also a comment on the RAA versus this PDP, the RAA working group, and I think from my perspective there is a direct overlap. What we are doing, if we were not doing it, might have been covered in an RAA as part of the RAA amendments, or might not. And I think, as Marika and Margie pointed out, that, you know, between the overlap participants and the staff who are involved in it, we'll try to make sure that the two cover all of the ground and don't replicate. But I think there is an inherent overlap regardless of what we do. One more. Last point. Regarding the note I sent about the two proposals that will be coming, I really wasn't trying to taunt or tease people, just give them a heads up that there is some work going on. The work has not proceeded post-Seoul, largely on my part because of the intellectual property working group that's going on and has taken virtually all of my time. But hopefully we will see something on those in the very near future. And lastly, the discussion that was held on essentially accessibility of the terms and conditions on the registrar website, I thought was an amazingly good discussion and brought a number of things to light, I think, which will serve us well as we go forward. So I thank Michele for chairing it, and I thank everyone who participated in it for a good meeting, even if I couldn't be there. McKaylee. Your hand up at some point.
Yes, just in relation to the overlap thing, there's an RAA meeting tomorrow, I believe, and I noticed from the document that Margie sent around that on the list of topics there are a couple of items that are definitely being handled by this PDP. So it really needs to be either knocked on the head immediately and pointed out that those are within this PDP, or just stop this PDP completely and let it go back into the RAA discussion.
I guess my feeling on it, but I'm willing to listen to others certainly, is that it's not intuitively obvious at this point just how successful we will be. So I wouldn't want to see it taken off the list of RAA things to talk about in the future. Remember, the drafting team that's working right now is just coming up with a list of topics, not actually doing the work. By the time they get around to actually doing some work, hopefully we'll be closer to finishing, and one can make a decision later on in the process for what should be taken off of their list. So I wouldn't want to see things removed at this point, but they should be aware of what's going on. Barry? Or McKaylee, if you want to rebut?
I mean, I think as long as it's made very, very clear that, you know, there is an overlap.
Yeah.
In other words, I can't see the point of, I mean, what is the point of us spending time discussing stuff in detail and then having people who obviously have very strong feelings about some of this post-expiry thing focusing their efforts on in the RAA thing? I mean, either it would, I think it would make more sense to me that those people have very strong feelings about post-expiry who are involved with the RAA, that maybe you can invite them into this group instead rather than, you know, ending up with...
I think that's a good suggestion, but again, I'll remind you that they're not talking about the substance, they're just making up a list at this point. Barry?
Yes, thank you. Since you brought it up, I was just, I don't know if this is probably opening a can of worms or not, but
oh, good.
The two initiatives that you had mentioned in your email, I was just wondering if you could shed a little bit more light on it. I attended ICANN remotely, and I'd like to think that I tried to cover just about every session, but I don't recall these proposals specifically at any one particular event, so I was just wondering if you could expand on it real quick. Thank you.
I really don't feel comfortable since neither of them are completely mine. Neither of them were covered in sessions. These are both backroom discussions that I've had with a number of people who would, you know, have some ideas of how we could go forward. And I was just trying to give the group a heads up that some things are coming. I don't think I can go into any more detail than I did, in that one is essentially a complete bottom-up, top-down redesign of everything associated with the end of life processes, and the other is, can we do something that will make everyone happy that isn't too complex? Both of them rather arrogant, I should point out. Any other thoughts before we go on with the back to the regular agenda?
Yes, this is Ron Wickersham.
Yes, Ron.
On this complete redesign, will we be participating in the final thing once the kind of outline is brought up?
I think this group is it. It's just okay. Someone has an idea they're going to present.
Thank you.
Anything else at this point? All right, Marika, if you could give us a little bit of an update on... there was another item. There was the feedback on request for additional data on CCTLDs.
Yes, that's me too.
Yes.
Following the last call, there was a question whether other CCTLDs have similar data available and whether it would, you know, possibly have interest as well to look at those. And so I did check with Barb Boswinkle, the policy staff person supporting the CCTLD, the CCNSO, and you know, he did indicate that Nominet isn't to some extent an exception there, providing really good research and data. He did indicate that some of the other CCTLDs do have data on, you know, how many domain names are renewed or expire, but they don't provide that kind of detail as to, you know, why domain names are being renewed or not renewed, or information like that. And he pointed out as well that, you know, CCTLDs have very different practices as how they deal with post-expiration. You know, some have 30-day periods, some, you know, auto-renew, and only in exceptional cases the domains are immediately deleted. So it's a question there. If the group wants to look into that further, you know, maybe some here on the group have specific suggestions at which CCTLDs might have models that might be of interest to look further at, but that's the initial feedback I received, and you know, I'm happy to look further into that, you know, following some guidance from the members of the group.
Yeah, Helen has your hand up.
Yes, just to follow up from last week, I did contact CIRA because they do a hell of a lot of surveys, and they got back to me and they said they would share their information with me, but they haven't actually done that yet. But I'm hoping that we will have something at least maybe similar to nominate from CIRA.
Okay. As I mentioned during my comments, I would like to follow up, have you follow up with nominate on a couple of questions that come out of the data, and I'd be glad I'll send them to the list, and the group can decide whether we want to follow up or not. But I think understanding something more about the dynamics in any given case will help us understand. Perhaps the right wording is the registrant's mindset. And how applicable it is across different domains, of course, is not 100% understood, but it may give us some insight. Anything else on that, America? Marika, are you still there?
Yes. Yeah, no, there was nothing. Sorry, nothing further.
Okay. You had the update on registrar survey as number 5. Is that a significant update or just a quick one?
I can give you a quick update.
Let's do that first before we go into the more lengthy discussion of the constituency statement.
Okay, because I completed another 2 registrars and have sent out that information to the respective registrars to with the question to fill in the gaps. Working on a third one, and I think there's still then 2 to go in the, you know, the top 10 that we're looking at. So I hope to have nearly final results at the next meeting, provided that I receive quick feedback from the registrars that I've approached. One thing that might be interesting to note is that I actually just stumbled upon a registrar that doesn't seem to be offering an auto-renew grace period, but where domain names are actually immediately deleted or immediately go to RGP upon expiration. That is, the registrar does apply auto-renewal for all domain or for all domains, so have a different system than some of the ones we've looked at so far. So I think we'll have some interesting information to look at going forward.
I can guess who that is, but okay. all right, so our target is still roughly 10 registrars.
Yes, and I think the group then will need to decide whether that provides sufficient data to have a valid discussion or whether more research needs to be undertaken.
Yeah.
I think that's what we decided initially, to go for the 10, and then, the only thing is the 10 are actually 9 because 2 of them have the same approach. So,
okay. My gut feeling, and I haven't mentioned this to anyone before, is we should go for our perhaps 2 or maybe 3 outliers, that is, registrars with reasonably large pools of domains, but not in the top 10, just to see if they differ substantively from the others. I don't know how much more work that would add, but it's something which may have some interest in trying to get what the rest of the picture looks like. But we can discuss that next week when you have this data or whenever that is. All right. Should we start on constituency statements? constituency slash stakeholder statements. Marika, do you want to take us through this? Because I haven't had a chance to look at it in any real depth.
Yep, I'm happy to go through each comment, but I would like to encourage those that have participated in drafting these statements to, you know, maybe provide some more explanation or details if they can, because, of course, this is just an abstract from the constituency or stakeholder group statement.
Right. Before you start, actually, Ron, you sent a note out saying that NCUC slash NCSG was planning to do something, but we shouldn't hold up the process. Is there still something in the works, or has that died a quiet death?
Yeah, it's pretty hard with all the other stuff going on in NCUC that seems people think are more important. So I just don't see it resolving to be worth holding up any further. I'll try to get feedback from them, you know, from the rest of NCUC as we go along, but a formal constituency statement is pretty hard to get at this time.
Okay. Taking off my chair hat and putting on my at-large hat, I guess we had not submitted a constituency statement since we initiated this, and we're I won't say trying to stay out of it, but thought we had already made our position clear. In retrospect now, Cheryl, I think we may need to talk offline and decide whether at large put something together in moderately quick time, even though it's past the deadline. Okay, Marika, over to you.
Yeah, so then looking at question one, whether adequate opportunity exists for registrants to redeem their expired domain names. The IPC there is suggesting that there should be a requirement for a mandatory 30-day renewal grace period following expiration with an additional email reminder after 15 days so that it would provide additional safeguards for the registrants.
So they're talking about 45 days total post-expiration, which, as it happens, is the current auto-renew period.
No, I think they just require the they want a reminder after 15 days.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Not 15 days after. It's 15 days after expiration.
Right. Middle of the 30 days.
Okay. Understand. Okay.
Moving on?
Yep.
So then the business constituency is of the opinion that there is adequate opportunity, but I think they do highlight that there's some inconsistencies that might lead to confusion and create unfair market conditions, and they promote the maintaining openness and transparency. I know, Barry, I don't know if you want to provide any further feedback on this one.
This is Barry. That's pretty much it. You know, we're just kind of taking note that not every domain expiration is the same and probably never will be, but for the most part, you know, there are some pretty large inconsistencies that I think do believe lead to confusion in the marketplace. And, you know, the typical registrant to be well informed of the world of expiration has to study quite a bit, and it's just definitely not as easy as an analogy would be as trying to return an article of clothing at a store. You know, the return processes may not be exactly the same from one store or another, but you know the general process is pretty well understood, and it's not so easily understood in the domain world, I think.
Okay. Marika, as you were talking, it question came up in my mind of do we have any information or any understanding of the profile of registrants for any given registrar. That is, they tend to be individuals or they tend to be businesses or anything. Has any of the WHOIS work given us any insight into that?
And this, Marika, I'm not aware of any information like that, but I'm happy to check. And I don't know if any of the registrar on the call might have any insight on that. I mean, they might check who their clients are. I don't know.
Yeah, I would suspect the big registrars on this call probably have a wide cross-section of all classes. That's my guess, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. I'm not sure that's the case for as one goes down the list of registrars. Nobody has their hand up, so let's keep on going then.
So the next comment is from the registrar stakeholder group, and they're of the opinion that adequate opportunity does exist, and they point out that registrars do encourage renewal before and after expiration. And they also mentioned that the unintentional non-renewal of a name is very rare.
Okay, no comments, questions? Let's keep going.
The registry stakeholder group points out that they don't have visibility of the registrant's opportunity to redeem expired domain names, and they would like the working group to try to get provide an overview of what the different alternatives are that registrar use to give registrants the opportunity to redeem expired domain names. And they suggest as well that the group should look at developing some criteria to define adequate opportunity and then evaluate whether those registrar alternatives meet that definition or not.
Helen.
Yeah, I just wondered, with as far as redeeming, you mean the redemption period that the registries were talking about?
Let me read this again as I'm trying to understand. As I said, I'm a little bit dulled from the last 6 hours of talking.
Yeah, it sort of went past rather fast for me, too, and I was trying to
summarize the major alternatives.
Alan, if I may comment, I think
yes, please.
Response to the actual question, which actually talks about whether adequate opportunity exists for registrants to redeem their expired domain names, and I think the redeem just relates to that and not specifically to the RGP, as they would have an insight there, if and when that happens. So I presume they talk more about what happens just following expiration before RGP.
Okay.
But well, I have wondered about the RGP itself, because some of the registries are not too difficult, but some of them make it more difficult. It would be useful if the redemption could be done through an API rather than such manual work, because sometimes there isn't enough time to do it in time, and it can really upset a registrant if they've been trying to redeem a domain and they lose it till the last minute, and then it does go into pending delete.
I think they're lucky if it goes into pending delete. At least there's an opportunity then. Whereas otherwise, it's the grace of the registrar to try to get it back if it's still gotten back at all.
Well, if it's in redemption, then the registrar can get it back. I'm just saying it would be nice if the registries could make it easier for the registrars to get it back.
True, but the issue being that in many cases, domains do not go into the redemption rate, do not get deleted and go into the RGP. They get transferred in some other way.
Yeah, you're talking about something different, but this is if the registrar does allow them to go into, they actually delete it and allow it to go into pending, into redemption, it would be nice if the registries could make it a little easier, have a consistent format so that the registrars can do it automatically instead of having to get somebody to go and go through this manual procedure. And we've automated it ourselves a number of times, but what happens is that the registries change it and then it's no longer automatic. So there is occasionally a situation that we've actually seen arisen where somebody really, really wants their domain back, and it's in the last day or two of redemption, and they get very upset, and you know, we have to pull all the punches to get somebody who can just do it at the last minute, whereas if it was an automatic process, it would be so much easier.
Any registrars have any other comments on that? Any other registrars? My understanding is it was an automated procedure these days. I may be wrong. James or Mason have any input?
I'm sorry, this is Mason. I'm sorry, Alan. I had somebody ask me something offline. What was the question again?
Helen was talking about the difficulty of doing an RGP redemption if it's right near the end because it's a manual process. And my understanding was, in fact, it was reasonably automated these days. At least that's the understanding I had from some registries. James?
Yeah, I'll probably have to confirm some of this, but I think that it is automated to some degree. It is outside of the normal channel of registrar operations, so it does not occur through the EPP necessarily, because I think that's a newer feature of the mm-hmm. of the latest version of EPP. So it really, I think, can vary significantly. But it's, you know, it's not, even if it is, it's not typically.
It's not common, certainly. Yeah. Helen, did you want to say something else, or is that hand from you?
No, my point is that it should be in the EPP. It should be a simple command so it can be done quickly if necessary, instead of making it work. I don't see why it has to be work, because it is a process that is just a command to the registry.
Okay. Ron?
Yes, I was wondering, is it appropriate for us to record in our deliberations what the cost of that redemption is, because that cost varies to the end user by a very wide margin, and I for one don't have any clue what the cost within the registry is, but back at the registrar itself, what that is.
Marita can confirm. My recollection is the revised RAA requires that registrars post that amount.
That's correct. The only thing is we did, the compliance team did do an audit, and I think there was some confusion where some registrars had interpreted the language as meaning, if you have a fee, you need to state, and some would just say, we have a fee, but not specify what the fee was. So I think that's something that is being followed up on, and normally I guess the compliance will follow up on that, and indeed that information should be posted on a registrar website.
And as per the discussion last week, one should be able to find it.
Well, right, but my question goes back to the cost, the outside cost to the particular registrar. Is that allowed to be part of our
the cost to the registrar or to the registrant?
To the registrar.
That is a fixed cost per registry, and it's public knowledge, if I remember correctly.
Okay, thank you. I'll try to find it then.
Okay. I know it used to be $60, and I think it just went down to $40 or something like that. I don't remember what the numbers are, but they're numbers in the two digits, I think. Jay Scott?
Yeah, I just wanted to remind everybody, when we talk about price, let's be very specific about what we're talking about. We're not doing any price setting. We're just talking about the fact that if they have a fee, what is the fee? And then if it's on the registered end, if you've marked up that fee, that be visible and they clearly know what that fee would be.
Yeah.
We are in no way discussing that we cap the fee, that we mandate what the fee would be, because that's not what we're here for.
Of course not. No, I don't think there's any question about that. And the lawyers would tell us otherwise if we thought, or tell us if we thought.
You got a lawyer raising the question.
Ron and Jay Scott, I assume, are old hands. Having no more hands, Marika, could we go on to the next one?
So the next one goes into the question two, whether expiration-related provisions in typical registration agreements are clear and conspicuous enough. The IPC makes the point there that the RIA clearly sets out obligations for registrars, and if registrars are not compliant, it should be for ICANN's compliance department to take action. They also make a suggestion that the compliance department should require each accredited registrar to provide it with current copies or linked to its standard registration agreement form, and to keep these copies or links up to date.
Comments? That comes back to the discussion that was had last week, which I think was an interesting one on the possibility, since much of the detail is buried within contracts, is there some way that it can either be exposed in a readily understandable way, or should ICANN be consolidating that information and making it readily available? James?
Yes, this question. I'm just curious as to what some possible recommendations might be to. I see a lot of judgment and subjectivity in the idea that something is clear and conspicuous. For example, we've sent out, let's say, a reminder email to a customer, and we found that sometimes you can put something in 24-point bold purple font, and it's still not sufficiently clear and conspicuous. So I'm just trying to.
I happen to be purple colorblind, so.
Okay. Well, maybe a bad example on my part there, Alan. Unless I'm calling you out directly, I was joking. Okay, fair enough. But just the concept here that I think that we should establish what is meant by clear and conspicuous. I mean, certainly you don't want to go out of your way to hide something or make it a scavenger hunt. But there's a document, there's terms of service, there's a registration agreement. I like to believe that folks are reading them and then. Understanding them and then clicking the I agree or checking the checkbox or whatever the registrar is having them do. But, how many of them are just, bulldozing right over that on the way to the shopping cart checkout? I think it's an area that we need to really be clear on what our goals are.
I'll give you my opinion, but I'd like to hear others because it is an important issue. I think it's one of these things that we may not quite agree with what clear and conspicuous is, but we'll probably all agree on what obfuscated and impossible to find is. Maybe we won't all agree. Michele?
I'm just kind of echoing what James was saying. I mean, We send out notifications to our beloved clients about a whole range of different things. And, people, we actually had a running battle with one client who told us quite happily that he did not read any of our emails. He acknowledged receipt of them, but he just didn't read them. And then, of course, it was our fault that the domain had, I can't remember whether the domain had expired or could have been something else. He acknowledged receipt, but just said, oh, no, I don't bother reading those. And he expected us to... I'm not actually too sure what he wanted, whether he wanted us to send him carrier pigeons or to come round to his house, sit outside his front door and, ask him to do things that way. I don't honestly know. So, I'm pretty much echoing what James was saying.
James, you're back in the queue?
Yeah, and just real quickly, and thanks, Michele. I mean, the war stories are always good to share, and we all have our tales. But this question touches on something that I think is important for this group to. It's not addressed directly; just keep in the back of our mind as a context for all of these questions, which is that I think that we certainly want to ensure that there are sufficient and adequate safeguards and protections to help guard registrants from the actions of registrars. But at a certain point, we're approaching this boundary condition here where we're protecting registrants from themselves or from the consequences of their own decisions or actions or indecisions or inactions. And I just think that we need to be careful to know where those topics begin and end. And I don't know if that's out of line by saying that, but I think that there is a certain point where I think that if a registrar or a registry or even ICANN can be shown to be doing its due diligence, and a registrant like McKelly was saying is simply non-responsive, that at a certain point we're somewhat protecting them from themselves, and I think that that starts to take us into an area that I'm uncomfortable with.
Helen?
Yeah, just to follow on that, and also what McKaylee said, you have a lot of registrants that just don't bother to update their email addresses or put everything on spam so they never get emails. And, you know, you do what you can. You try to get as many different email addresses as possible from the registrants and ask them to update regularly, but often they just don't. So again, where does the responsibility fall if the registrant doesn't get the emails through actions that they can control and not the registrar?
Well, I put myself on the speaking list, and I'm going to put on the hat as a representative from at large, a spokesman on behalf of the what is currently 1.7 billion users in the world and who knows how many registrants. There's nothing we can do about the outliers. Those who choose to ignore everything that's said, those who choose not to take any action, at some point, they're the victims of their own decisions, and we can't fix that all. We can't protect everyone from themselves. And I think we have to do a reasonable job for those who are in a moderately good position. Now, on the issue of email addresses, I have more sympathy, and I think we have to think about how to handle that aspect. But in general, we are not going to fix everyone's problems, and I don't think we should even be thinking in that mode, and nor feeling guilty that we can't.
But I think at the same time we should acknowledge that, because registrants that get very upset, as McKaylee said, because we didn't go to their door and knock on them and say, would you like to renew your domain, because we've communicated with you every other way and you're not.
Well, and maybe we need to go and knock on their door, but whatever it is,
well,
ultimately there is some level we can't do.
I don't think we can afford that
probably not.
So what we need to do is acknowledge that we take all reasonable methods to try and contact them. But if we cannot contact them, we're sorry, but we couldn't.
Yeah, but as a registrant who normally renews things for 10 years just so I don't have to worry about forgetting, would I pay an optional fee of $25 to receive 3 phone calls if it ever expires? Yes. I might opt for that kind of service. Again, we're talking about how to register and differentiate themselves from each other. In any case, McKaylee?
Yeah, but calling Canada is going to have to be $35, sir.
$35. We're not allowed to talk prices here.
And just another stupid little war story for you, just to give you an idea of what registrants can do. Our company name is Black Knight, as most of you probably know. One of our beloved clients put an email filter on his mail to block all emails with the term black, because he was getting certain types of email messages referring to black ladies with interesting, well-endowed black ladies involved in various nocturnal activities.
That's quite specific.
I wish I was making this up. I wish I was making this up. This actually happened about a year and a half or so ago. They stopped getting all emails from us because they had blocked the word black. So I thank you, Alan, for acknowledging the fact that we can't protect people from their stupidity. However, I do take issue with the very suggestion that you would expect any registrar to start turning up on people's doorsteps. even if you said that in jest, I still find it, the very idea of it, quite scary.
Well, I will comment that if you follow the practices that some other registrars have said they follow, you wouldn't have a problem.
Which practices would those be?
Sending the renewal notices out from a completely different email address, which has nothing to do with your name of your company.
I'm not going to reply to that.
Marika, seeing no hands, can we go on to the next item?
Yeah, the next point is made by the business constituency, in which they point out that there are clear and not so clear conditions that exist across the market space, and they would like to see a promotion of consistency that feasibly enhances fair competition and right-sizes business practices within the market.
Comments? On to the next.
The registrar stakeholder group points out that the RAA and the EDDP spell out the terms and conditions and that these need to be maintained on the registrar website. And they know that registrars try to use clear and understandable language whenever possible, but also pointing out that this is in the context of presenting a valid legal agreement.
Seeing no hands up. The last one for Q2.
Comments made by the registry stakeholder group, and their view is that it would require an exhaustive examination of agreements between registrar and registrants in order to form an opinion on this question.
Since we are not likely to do an exhaustive comparison, how, in fact, do we do this? Any thoughts?
You just do a sample.
Which is what we're doing right now, right now, at least, a sample of weighted towards larger number of registrants.
Well, and you might also check with the compliance department, see where they've received some complaints in this regard, and look at what was going on at that particular registrar.
I have a comment on that, but Michele had his hand up first.
I just think, Alan, with all due respect, I mean, the constituency statements on these questions were provided without them being aware of exactly what was going on, I think, with regard to the registrar survey. So in many respects, as has already been pointed out, we're already doing this through the sample thing. So in some, it's a bit moot.
Fair.
So I would agree with J. Scott Allen. I think we already covered that with compliance previously, unless I'm confusing working groups.
I guess my concern about compliance is we've asked a number of times, can we have any statistics on renewal issues from compliance and complaints, and we haven't really gotten anything. We got statistics on transfers, but still not on anything related to renewals. So we're still working a little bit blind from that perspective. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I just want to point out that in the research I'm undertaking, I'm basically abstracting different parts from different, registration agreements, FAQs, help sections, but it's not really a comparison of language that exists in registration agreements. I mean, I have those data and, I have them on file and stacks on my desk, but in principle, that's not what the research is about. I mean, it shouldn't be too difficult to take that language, but then we do go back to a point that, of course, and you make it very visible, which language comes from which registration agreement. So that might be a separate exercise if people really want to look at the language that's currently contained. And I can comment there that I've seen indeed very different things in registration agreements where some are very clear, but many of the agreements, as these are legal agreements, do have like we may or may not or this might happen, we're free to change it. And I think some registrars explained as well that, that's a legal agreement and some of the details are, spelled out sometimes in other sections or other documents that are also provided through the registrar.
Marika, maybe we can ask you to add another row to the matrix you're coming up with, and saying what level of pain was associated in getting the information that you're presenting.
How do I rate my level of pain?
Well, we'll leave that up as completely subjective.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I mean, looking at the information, like the first few, I just tried to go on the website, but I quickly gave up, and I would just type into Google, like, the registrar name and registration agreement, and that was the quickest way to actually get the information off them. 'Cause I mean, in all reality as well, I mean, many registrars sell many more services than only domain names. And, you know, you have to go and find where the, you know, the section is often what it on domain names. Some have on their website, you know, terms and conditions, so you go through there. But, you know, it's not always intuitive, I found.
Yeah, well, maybe we need to capture some of that once you're finished the whole process. Because I think, again, that comes back to just how can we expect a registrant to get this information if these are the kind of things that you had to go through with some of them. And maybe we need to capture some of the things you did do in the process. Michele.
Just two things. One, I mean, with regard to compliance, maybe compliance simply don't have complaints with regard to renewals. They may have a lot of other complaints. So, you know, it sounds like that you're working on the basis that there is a problem, but surely compliance, if they had the information, they would have been willing to share it. And the second thing is, when it comes to legal documents, I can't speak for all registrars, but I know damn well that our solicitors, no matter what we may or may not do in general, they would always advise us to use certain language in any documents that they're drafting or revising with us, so that you do end up with this kind of may or may not type scenario, simply because if they advised us to put anything else there, then they'd be delinquent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with regards to your statement on compliance, I don't think I was let me rephrase that. My understanding is they gave us the information that they have, but since they do not regularly categorize complaints with a tick box saying this is about renewal, it is no statistic that they have, short of going through a pile of complaints and trying to accumulate that information, and that's the reason that we haven't gotten any. Not necessarily because there aren't any, but the information was not readily available to the extent that it's there.
Alan, can I comment on that?
Sure, please.
So just quickly look through the emails, because I do recall that the compliance team did share some data, and I found the email, and I'm happy to resend that to the mailing list. I mean, one of the issues is that, you know, the complaints are filed and self-reported, so it depends a bit as well where registrants see the problem, because sometimes it might be linked, you know, they might think it's a transfer issue while it's actually an expiration
mm-hmm.
issue. But looking in there, there is a specific category as well for example, redemption, domain renewal, and, you know, there are definitely complaints received. So I'm happy to share that again.
Okay.
But
I don't recall that, so maybe you could.
I'll forward it to the list now. It's sent on 10th of August.
Thank you. Jay Scott?
I just want to say that I'm with Marika. I mean, one of the most easily incontroversial things in all of registrar compliance is put who is. And every time I go to a new registrar, I hunt around, and I know what I'm doing, forever to find it. It's very difficult to find. I've been to some registrars that's down in their copyright notice just about, in font so small I have to take off my glasses and sit with my nose pressed up to the screen because I am of an age. So, and that's one of the more obvious things that people are looking for. And something this obscure, I'm almost certain if they're doing that with who is, they're doing the same thing with the conspicuousness of the particular provisions that we're discussing here. So I don't think it would be that very difficult to find. With regard to your point, Alan, about they don't have the statistic, they'd have to go through the complaints, well, they've got $68 million. Hire some people and go through the complaints and get a statistic.
Okay. Well, Marika's indicated I may have been wrong on that, so
okay.
Let's take a look at what she has.
I don't take ICANN. It's too small and can't do anymore. There's a sophisticated organization. There's a lot they require volunteers to do. Spend some money and get us the information we need. That's an obligation because the registrars, if they're going to have onus put on them to do something, it should be backed up with hard data.
Okay. Helen?
I don't object to ICANN doing information, but on the other hand, any time they do their $60 million studies, everybody in the world that has a domain name is indirectly paying for it. And I really think that as a non-profit organization, ICANN does spend quite a lot of money, and I wonder whether they can do some of it a little bit more efficiently so we don't have to have domain names gradually crawl up in price. And one of the methods is to talk to the registrars more. You can ask registrars for information, and very often registrars have the information and they can give it to them too. One of the things that CIRA does to their registrars is to ask for information, can you please do this survey, can you do this? And because they realize that most of their registrars have life, they will offer small little incentives, but just enough to encourage somebody to do it. Like they'll say, we'll give you a USB card, or we'll give you a hat, or we'll give you $15 to your, whatever your favorite charity. Some little thing, but it's often enough to, at least I assume it is, to get their information, but probably for considerably less than $60 million.
Michele?
Just actually to back up, well, both Jay Scott and Helen. I mean, the thing is, yeah, I mean, you know, we have a vested interest in what happens with policy development, because obviously it impacts our businesses. But the other thing as well, as Helen said, I mean, a lot of the time you get to see these things coming out where certain kind of ideas seem to be developing somewhere, but nobody's actually bothered to check whether technically they're factual or not. I mean, there are so many ICANN staff who seem to think that, or consultants who work for ICANN or people involved there somewhere, who seem to think that domain name equals website. So you end up with this ridiculous conversation where they're talking about websites when really they're meant to be talking about domain names, and the domain name is not a website. It can be used for so many other things.
No argument there, Ron?
Yes, I would be curious on the total number of complaints that the compliance department gets, so we have some more order of understanding of the magnitude of how much complaint, even if it isn't categorized to the particular thing we have. And then the second question is there anything in the agreements that actually requires a reseller or a registrar to provide who is? I'm not aware that there is.
Yes, there is.
Okay, sorry. Okay.
It's part of the RAA.
Yeah. Who has their hand up for real? Jay Scott, Ron, Marika.
Yeah, I just put my hand back on to answer Ron's question. In the data I've just sent round, basically it's compliance issues through, I think it's probably from January to July 2009, I presume that. In total of 7,263 complaints have been received, which the majority of those being transfer-related issues. And again, there, of course, transfer implies a lot of different issues, so we're discussing internally. I think we need to get better at qualifying those and make sure that they get in the right categories. And if I recall correctly, I think from the start, the transfer has been receiving the largest number of complaints. But the compliance team has a website in which they provide, I think, a really report, if I'm not mistaken, providing an overview of how many complaints are received and trying to categorize, which areas those complaints have been received. So I'm happy to find where that information resides and share that as well on the mailing list.
Okay, let's proceed. We're down to 20-something minutes left in the meeting. Marika?
Yes, I'm just trying to see where we were. So I think we were on the comments from the business constituency. They basically indicate that, yes, there is adequate notice, and they agree as well that it's more a question of compliance and monitoring of compliance than anything else, than making changes to the policy.
Did we?
I think we're on question four. We had just finished the question regarding registry saying that there would be too many agreements to review. So I think we're at question four now.
All
I thought we were on the first one of question three, actually.
Yeah, we just covered the first one of question three.
No, I don't think I may have missed it, but I don't think we did.
Yeah, we did, because we came into the thing about talking about agreements, and I said you would do a sample of agreement, and that's where we got to talking about statistics. So we're on question four.
This is Mikey. The problem is the same comments repeated in both the last question.
I see.
Last in question three.
Okay, have we done the first, the IPC comment in question three?
No.
Geez, sorry.
Sorry. I got lost there as well.
Okay. I'm in a bit of a daze, so I wasn't sure.
I think we've all been in the same day. So, question three, whether adequate notice exists to alert registrants of upcoming expirations. The IPC there suggests that the working group should examine the data necessary to determine if there's a correlation between non-renewed domain names and reminder notices, which are undeliverable due to a bad email address or inaccurate contact information.
I don't disagree with that. I assume it's data, not date.
Yes.
How would we get such information? As far as I know, the only people who would have that information are registrars, and it's not clear that it has ever been shared with us or would be. No one wants to take that up? Helen?
Again, it's a question of asking us nicely.
The mind boggles how one would do that in the general case. All right, any other comments? You should go ahead.
So the next one is the business constituency, where they make the point that it's a question of compliance and monitoring of compliance. And they also make the point that it's the failure to maintain accurate with data is the leading culprit to expiration alert notification fill.
Probably true. And perhaps verifiable if we had the data in the in reference to the IPC statement. One wonders to what extent, and again, I don't think we have the ability to answer this. Maybe one of the WHOIS studies is looking at it. To what extent is WHOIS data inaccurate because it was deliberately put there inaccurately, or to what extent is it out of date? Does anyone have any feeling as to how these two compare? We have Helly and McKaylee. I don't know if it's in answer to my question or something else, but Helen, go ahead.
It's not quite in answer to your question. I just don't understand the whole question, failure to maintain accurate WHOIS as a leading culprit to expiration alert notifications. Are you saying that the registrars have inaccurate data and therefore they don't know when to send out renewal notices? Or why would this? Because very few registrants monitor the WHOIS to see whether they think their domain is expired. And the ones that do often get confused by the auto thing and think, oh, it's been automatically renewed, so I don't have to pay for it. So I actually don't understand.
I think they're talking about the accuracy of the information used to contact the registrant.
So rather than say failure to maintain accurate WHOIS, failure to maintain an accurate database, because those can be quite different.
Okay, we may be talking different things. McKaylee, I'll put myself back in the queue, but McKaylee's next.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, there's no, even if all the registrars were really helpful and wanted to cooperate and provide this group with all sorts of information about what they thought, the reality is that what is in WHOIS and whether or not a registrant decides to renew a domain or not probably doesn't really matter, because if the domain ceases to function and the registrant is using the domain, then they will presumably notice that it has ceased to function and take action to renew the domain. Now, whether or not the actual who, the any data that they put in Whois has changed or not is secondary. Because, I mean, there's nothing to stop somebody from just picking up the phone and ringing the registrar and going, hey, my domain needs to be renewed. So there's no accurate way to actually get that information. I mean, if the registrants aren't keeping up to date records, there's no way for us as registrars to do anything really about that. The onus lies with the registrants. The only exception to that being if the registrar were preventing the registrant from updating their contact details.
It's Alan. I guess I read this statement as not being a statement. Excuse me, a statement about registrars and how well they maintain databases, but that registrants do not necessarily keep their information up to date, or perhaps have it up to date to begin with, and that's the way I read that statement. It had nothing to do with registrars at all.
Fair enough. I mean, it's just asking, you know, how many, you know, the things like the undeliverable due to bad email addresses type thing. I mean, personally, speaking from my own experience, I mean, the only way we would have of doing that is if we were to start doing a stupid amount of data crunching on mail logs, which we're not really going to start doing. But that's just my own thoughts on it.
And indeed, you can't, you know, you might be able to recognize bounces. You can't tell mail that goes into black holes, and some does. So.
Well, we also get bounces as well from mail servers that, you know, that it appears as a bounce, but it gets delivered to the mailbox.
Oh, I understand.
It's, you know, it's not very accurate anyway, so, you know.
Barry?
Yes, just to reinforce and put clarity on that statement, it's pointing to the registrant failing to maintain their accurate information to try to reinforce that there's really not a policy change that's required here. It's just more a compliance and monitoring of that compliance because, you know, probably, I'm just pulling a number out of the air, but out of the entire market space of registrars, you know, there might be 4 or 5% that don't give adequate notice per the guidelines set forth in the RAA. That's where the compliance piece comes in. But ultimately, the main issue here is, in fact, registrants failing to provide the latest and greatest contact information.
Okay, I must comment on that the RAA, in fact, doesn't really have any requirements for advance notice.
The new one does, correct?
No, it does not. It talks about a second notice, which must be given sometime prior to expiration. But the second notice could be a microsecond before expiration, and the first notice a millisecond before, in the extreme, and it would be compliant. So one of the things we may want to look at is, in fact, putting some more specific guidelines there. They're not there today. Now, that doesn't say registrars aren't doing honorable and responsible things, but we can't attribute it to the RAA. No more hands. Let's keep on going.
Next point is made by the registrar stakeholder groups, in which they point out that most registrars, if anything, over-notify their customers of pending expiration. They also point out that access to this information is a registrar's responsibility, and noting as well that if a domain name is a critical asset, registrants would presumably take measures to be sure the registration is properly monitored and renewed.
An admirable position to take. And Helen had a comment.
about it.
Yeah, I just wanted to actually agree with that statement. We do get more complaints about getting extra emails than they would like. It's just the rare ones where they haven't got the emails, they have a fit. For all of our renewal notices, we actually have ticky boxes so they can untick and never receive any emails if they so choose. Most of them don't do that. So the ones that have complained, why are you sending me this email to all of my contacts? I'll untick those if you want, or you can untick them. But they will still complain that we've got too many. As a matter of fact, when every time somebody renews a domain, we ask for an email address, and we'll add that to the list of email addresses to send email reminders unless they so choose not to add it. So, yes, in most cases, we probably do oversend reminders, but the very small exception that don't get them are the ones that raise blue murder for their own incompetence in many cases.
Because...
Pretty much echoing what Helen said. I mean, we've had multiple complaints from our clients about the volume of emails that we send them in relation to ordering something, renewing something, and everything else. And the thing is, trying to strike the balance between, you know, we have to do certain things because legally we're required to do so, but other things that we are required to do so because of, you know, various registry agreements and everything else. I mean, ultimately, unless you're out to screw over your clients, you're going to be sending them notifications. So, you know, obviously I'd agree with that statement, and I quite was one of the registrars who agreed to that statement being put forward by the constituency.
Okay, let's go ahead.
Last point is made by the registry constituency, where they make the same point as before, that they can only form an opinion on this question following further examination of agreements between registrars and registrants.
Statements? Comments? Marika, the floor is yours again. We have 12 minutes left.
We're getting to question four, whether additional measures need to be implemented to indicate that once the domain name enters the auto-renew grace period, it has expired. The IPC proposal that consideration should be given to an update of the Whois record, analogous to the dispute notice, to reflect that the domain name is now expired and to provide information on how to effectuate a redemption and renewal.
Michele.
I mean, this has come up in other discussions that we've had, and it seems as if once we mention making any changes to these kind of various statuses that are set within Whois, it's as if we're talking about a sacred cow that cannot possibly be modified. Now, personally, and I'm sure some of my colleagues will disagree with me strongly, that's their prerogative. I would be a lot happier if, especially with thick registries, if it was made clear in the Whois status for the domain what status it actually held as far as the registry was concerned, in terms of whether it was within a renewal period or whatever. I would be a lot happier with that, because it would mean it would be clear for all parties concerned. But if you notice further down, I know we haven't got to it yet, the registry constituency, again, doesn't seem to want to give an answer on that. It seems to push everything back.
James?
Yes, in fact, I've been waiting for this question for quite a while, and McKelly went and responded equivalently and much more eloquently than I would. But essentially, one bit of confusion that we see quite frequently is that when a domain name auto-renews, the registry increments the expiration date in the Whois by 1 year. And I think that their response to this question, I guess I would want to maybe rephrase it and pose it to them a little more directly. And I don't know if we have an RC rep on this call, but the question would be, would it be unreasonable to ask that in a thick or thin Whois, that an asterisk or something be attached to a date that is that the registry has renewed, but for which they have not been paid by the registrar, or that the registrar has an option to have that refundable. And I think that, you know, this is something that could go a long way to eliminating a lot of confusion on the part of registrants. And I agree with McKelly. It's for some reason it's a non-starter as a conversation, and I probably am sufficiently naive to not know why that is such a sensitive subject. But I mean, clearly something needs to indicate when something has been renewed automatically by a registry that they have not yet secured the payment, or at least they have secured, but it's available for refund from the registrar.
Yeah, I was just going to clarify that, in fact, they have been paid. It's refundable, but from the point of view of a financial transaction, it has been paid. We had an extensive discussion on this a few weeks ago on should there be two different expiration dates and who is one from the registrant's point of view and one from the registrar's point of view. And I do not think it's off the table. I don't think it's sacred. I think it's something that we may well end up with in our final recommendation. McKaylee, is this a new one or an old one?
No, it's a new one.
Okay.
I mean, with as we've mentioned the COUKs again in the past, and but for example, with the COUK registry, when the domain, when a renewal request has been sent by the registrar to the registry, but it's within the billing period, it's just to do with the way Nominet handles the billing for the registrars, it doesn't say, you know, domain, just, you know, domain renewal date. It actually has with a status set saying, I think it's something like renewal requests being processed or something along those lines. Other registry operators, for example, the .ie CCTLD, based on our registrar feedback, because we were getting sick of fielding the same kind of queries, we also added extra statuses to their WHOIS output in order to flag various different statuses of, mm-hmm. of domains. Now, the problem is this, and just kind of following up a bit on what James is saying, and I may be being a little bit more forceful about this than I would normally be because I'm trying my best to be diplomatic, is that when in both this working group and another working group which I'm involved with, the registry operators have an awful habit of kind of going, oh, no, we can't possibly discuss this, or just shoving it straight, going, oh, no, that's a registrar problem. Whereas in a lot of instances, it would be significantly easier, significantly saner, significantly clearer if the registry were to actually take some form of action, be that in terms of doing something to prevent an action from occurring or changing a status so that it's explicit and clear. Because one of the other conversations we had about this was, you know, where the data is coming from in terms of where people do or who is looking. And ultimately, you know, if the registry is sending some data down the tubes back to everybody, then it can be displayed, and then you get this nice uniformity.
Mikey?
This is Mikey. You know, this came up, some of you IRTP hands helped me out, I think it was in the last IRTP working group, and one of the discoveries that we sort of made as a group is that WHOIS is really two systems in one. It's the WHOIS system of controversy and strife that has a policy discussion that goes back many years and it's very locked up, but it's also the operational system by which registries and registrars communicate a lot of information. And one of the things that we arrived at was that the blurring between those two kinds of systems really complicates this discussion. To the extent that we can separate out the operational aspects, which is what this discussion is all about. This is the operational database by which critical information is communicated really between registrants, registrars, and registries, and proceed to make positive changes. I think everybody benefits from that. And so I'd just like to chime in from that perspective and support, you know, this general theme, which is don't take this off the table just because it's who is, because who is the operational system by which we hold this whole thing together.
I'll just make one comment, and I don't pretend to speak on behalf of registries, but in one of my previous calls on the IP clearinghouse, there was a discussion which had to do with adding a who is entry that currently doesn't exist, and it was pointed out that this is essentially table driven, and one can add entries. Of course, it means that all the registries involved and all the registrars involved will have to take action to implement it. But it's not necessarily sacred. It's just a lot of work. Michele?
More work for us, I might add. This is James. I think that that's...
Well, perhaps, but certainly, certainly there's more of you.
Yeah, and we're willing to discuss it, so I think it should remain on the table.
Yeah, I just want to follow up and say with regards to what Mikey was saying, I mean, there's two parts to who is. There's the contentious thing, which is to do primarily with the contact details for the registrant and all that, which is best not discussed. But just the other side with the pure operational aspects of them, there's no reason why that cannot be discussed. And if the registry operators cannot constantly push it back to everybody else and try to disavow any responsibility in terms of what appears there. So I think, you know, it's something that should be discussed.
Yeah, and as I pointed out, the comment I was echoing was made by a registry. So there's no one denying that changes can be made, and some of the whois changes are not, as Mikey's pointed out, are not in the list of the controversial ones that have been discussed at infinitum.
Yeah, I mean, from our perspective, Alan, I mean, I can't speak for the other registrars, but I know from our perspective, our whois server, basically, it's a template. All it is a bloody template, and there's labels, and then the fields are populated from a database.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can change the language that's in those labels very, very easily. And I can add more fields from the database if I have that data.
Yep.
If it's from the whois that I am producing. But for a thick whois, the data is held by the registry. They already have the data. So it's simply a matter of them making those changes. And if they have, it's a database-driven system. And unless they've gone off and tried to reinvent the wheel, they're probably using something which is not dissimilar the systems that companies like ourselves are using in order to populate those fields that appear in whois wherever the hell it appears.
I think we're all violently agreeing with each other. Mikey?
Oh, sorry.
Okay, Helen then?
No, I was just saying, as another registrar, I agree with Michele 100%.
Anyone want to disagree? All right, if I remember correctly, that was the last question of question four. Am I correct? Marika has dropped off. She's in the middle of dialing in.
So no, I'm back on.
You're back. Oh, it doesn't say you are yet.
I'm down, if you look at the meeting view, there's a separate entry again.
Oh, it still says separate entry. Still says disconnected
again
on mine. But okay, you're back, so go ahead.
So I'm just looking at the list. The business constituency says as well that they're going to comment once further analysis has been completed by the post-expiration or by the working group. So just move through the list as we're almost at the end of the,
yep,
the call. Registrar stakeholder group says there's no need to have additional measures. They conclude that it's highly unlikely that additional measures would encourage renewals when previous notices have not. comment. The registry stakeholder group also points out that
some of us disagree, but we don't feel the need to comment.
Okay. The registry stakeholder group points out as well that they would like further data gathering, and that should be the guiding question for the working group to answer. They also note another meaningful question might be what current contemporary purpose is served by the autumn and new grace period, and how does it affect or influence the success of the subsequent RTP?
All good questions. Does anyone have any comment on the current auto-renewal grace period? Should it be scrapped? Is it what's causing our problems? No answer. Since our meeting is officially over, I'm somewhat dead. Can we agree to continue the last little bit next week? And we meet at the same time next week? Any disagreement? Is anyone still there?
Still here.
Okay.
We agree.
And silence is agreement. I thank you all. I thank you for putting up with my somewhat slap-happy chairing today. But there's only so much teleconferencing one can take in a day. And I wish you all well for the rest of the week, and for those celebrating Thanksgiving, that's still not till next week, is it? I withdraw my good wishes for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
I'll see you all in a week.
Thank you. Thanks, all.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.